welcome to both council thank you for agreeing to join us via Zoom today. We had hoped to see you in person, but unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond our control, it didn't work out that way. We are now ready to hear the third case on our calendar for today, September 13th, 2022. I am joined by my colleagues, Judges Werke and Jessen. And our case is A211627, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Mark Daniel Morrell Jr., Appellant. Just a few words to counsel before we begin to hear your arguments this morning. The clock is on screen. Can you both see that? You can just nod your head if you can see it. Okay, good. That clock will be keeping track of your time. I know that you're both aware of the time restrictions on your arguments, but I'll go over them anyway. Appellant will have 15 minutes. Respondent will have 15 minutes, and then appellant will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal argument. We are making a recording of your arguments this morning. It's going to be an audio recording. Please make sure that when you're not speaking counsel, your mic is mute so that the audio recording is as high a quality as possible. And then finally, please just introduce yourself and identify the party you represent at the outset of your arguments. With that, we are ready to go. We will first hear from counsel for appellant. Ms. Lawler, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the court, my name is Amy Lawler. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent Mark Morrell in this appeal. This is a case where the briefs largely speak for themselves. Mr. Morrell received a top-of-the-box sentence of 91 months and seeks a lower sentence within the guidelines range as allowed under the plea agreement. The pre-sentence investigation assessor recommended a middle-of-the-box presumptive sentence of 76 months. And at sentencing, Mr. Morrell's attorneys emphasized that he sought to take responsibility for the offense, give the victims closure, avoid causing more pain and suffering, and spare his victims from the trauma of trial. Minnesota statutes do establish that this court may reverse or modify a sentence imposed for an abuse of discretion if that sentence is excessive. And this court has the authority to modify a sentence given by the trial court, even if the sentence is within the presumptive sentence range. Under State v. Delk, this court may modify it.
Ms. Lawler, if I can just stop you right there. But we only do that, our case law says, in a rare case. So what makes this case rare?
I think that the brief kind of pointed out essentially the two potential grounds for this. One would be that under the guidelines report that indicates the large number of cases that receive either dispositional or durational departures, combined with the fact that most offenders on their first sexual offense receive probation, coupled with the fact that there were unique circumstances in this case, including Mr. Morrell's own intoxication, as well as his efforts to take responsibility quickly for the offense and his ongoing efforts to give the victims closure and avoid causing more pain and suffering and spare anyone from that additional trauma, do provide grounds should the court choose to exercise its discretion in this case to modify that sentence. And certainly Delk and Kraft, Hennem, those cases do establish that it is a rare case. And certainly this is an ask for Mr. Morrell on Mr. Morrell's part to ask this court to modify a guideline sentence. But Delk does establish that this court can modify a sentence if compelling circumstances exist. It doesn't call for extraordinary circumstances, just compelling ones. And certainly Vasquez also established that this court has the discretion to modify a sentence if it appears to be in the interests of fairness and uniformity. And we do believe that such circumstances exist in this case, particularly in light of the report laying out the general range of sentencing and departure for first-time sex offenders. And so we ask that this court reduce Mr. Morrell's sentence, as the plea agreement does allow it to do. Beyond that, I believe that the briefs speak for themselves, and if there are no further questions, we would rest on our brief.
Thank you for your argument, Ms. Lawler. Next, we will hear for counsel for respondent. You may proceed. You have 15 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sean McCarthy. I'm an assistant Rice County attorney. I appear today on behalf of the respondent, the state of Minnesota. Judge Jessen, you nailed it. What is it that makes this rare and unusual as a case? What makes the compelling circumstances? State would submit that there simply isn't anything here that reaches those compelling circumstances. In fact, this court has stated and the Supreme Court has stated that it is the trial court which sits in a unique perspective throughout the proceedings to best evaluate remorse and how credible or how believable that remorse is, and how to balance that remorse against the remaining factors that are to be considered at sentencing. The state would submit that the trial court did exactly that. If you haven't had the chance to dig into this case, the sentencing transcript, pages 23 to 26, the trial court has just heard victim impact statements from the victim herself, the 15-year-old juvenile, as well as her mom, her dad, her great-grandmother. It's also heard the arguments of counsel, including the arguments of defense counsel at the trial level, expressing that was the first time that the defendant expressed remorse was through his counsel at the day of sentencing. And then at pages 23 to 26, the trial court talks about out loud, makes specific ruminations and balancing. It evaluates the information provided and exercises its discretion. The state would submit that that exercise of discretion is exactly what the case law requires. You need to consider all of that information, balance and weigh it, and there's nothing here that reaches the level of compelling circumstances.
Oh, Mr. McCarthy, I did look at the transcript, and I appreciated that the trial court talked about, appreciated that, you know, the appellant here didn't put the victim through trial, took responsibility, at least at the sentencing, but then weighed the other factors. But I noticed that, at least I don't recall seeing, that the district court acknowledged that the PSI, the writer of that, recommended the 76-month sentence, kind of the middle-of-the-box sentence. Shouldn't we expect the district judge to address that?
The district judge isn't required to address everything that the PSI writer said, but to the court's point, the district court judge did, in fact, explain why it was going with the 91 instead of the 76. It specifically found that despite the eventual statement of remorse at the last minute, which suggests that the court kind of was saying, you know, hey, you're finally coming around at the very last minute. I'm glad you're coming around at the last minute, but that's very different than somebody who has been acknowledging remorse from day one. So it's giving that less credit. And on the other side, the court was noting, this is an individual who has commission of the offense, gave a 15-year-old whom he was an authority figure for, a public figure in her world. He gave her a sleeping pill and took sexual advantage of her.
Mr. McCarthy, I just need to ask this. I know it's in the PSI, but it's not at my fingertips. Everybody's calling this a sleeping pill. Wasn't it Xanax or something that is a little harsher than a sleeping pill over the counter? Can you help me recall what it was?
Your Honor, my understanding is it was a Xanax, but it was referred throughout the record to different kinds of medication, and sleeping pill came up multiple times. I apologize. I fell into the same confusion that the court did. My recollection is that it was a Xanax. Does that respond to the court's question?
Yes, it does. It just I think the importance of the medication should be regarded. Thank you.
Thank you. To get back to Judge Jessen's question, the trial court factored in all of those things and explained in its finding. It found that the use of this particular pill, the Xanax, coupled with the position of authority, court didn't use that phrase, position of authority, but this was a person who was a very important figure in this juvenile woman's life. That combination is what tipped the balance for the court to go with the 91-month sentence. Judge Jessen, does that respond to your question? In light of that, the state would submit that case law is replete with multiple examples of if you plead guilty to a guideline sentence and you receive a guideline sentence within the box, that is not an appropriate time for this court to exercise its supervisory power and interfere with the discretion exercised by the trial court. Trial court's in the best spot to evaluate what weight do we give those factors. Trial court heard it with their own ears rather than reading it through a transcript. Unless there are further questions, I would defer to the court and return to counsel to respond.
Thank you for your argument, Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you.
Ms. Leller, do you have any rebuttal that you would like to provide?
Thank you, Your Honor. Unless this court has any additional questions, I don't have any rebuttal and would rest on my brief.
Okay, well, thank you both very much for your arguments this morning, and thanks again.